Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Welcome to our second hour here on Circles of Change. It's always a pleasure to have an in-studio guest, which we have right now, Mr. Greg Johnson, doctor, in fact, campus director for the University of Phoenix. Welcome to our show.
Thank you very much.
Great. We're going to have some fun in this period of time, of course, a year with a lot of people graduating from school and those thinking about what's next in their life, too. Greg has been campus director at the four University of Phoenix locations here in southern Arizona since 2006, moving from Utah, where he was director of academic affairs for them. Greg's association with the university, though, dates back to 1994 as an instructor, when he was also working full-time for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, a career from which he retired in 2001 after over 30 years of service. Growing up in California and Utah, Greg majored in Spanish in college and then flew as a U.S. Navy pilot prior to pursuing high school and college-level teaching career in religious education, earning a master's in educational psychology and then the doctorate of educational leadership from Brigham Young. Greg worked for the church on national and international levels, plus was a volunteer administrator for the Utah Boys Ranch for many years. His teaching, writing, training, and materials management work enabled him as well to travel extensively to all parts of the world, favorite spots, Chile, Central America, and Singapore, and for 10 years he directed archaeological tours to Central America and Mexico. And along the way, while living in St. Louis for 7 years with his wife and 11 children, all boys except child number 10, Greg also started and maintained two businesses, a bookstore servicing teachers and a food co-op that grew to over 400 member families. So today, in addition to his leadership role at the University of Phoenix, Greg is a very active civic contributor, serving on many boards, the Tucson Regional Economic Organization, Boys and Girls Club of Tucson, Workforce Investment, Community Food Bank, Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, and the Boy Scouts of America. Indeed, he told me here that all 10 of those young men are Eagle Scouts. So that's a troop in and of itself. Congratulations to your family.
Well, thank you.
Well, how lucky we are. The University of Phoenix, Greg, many people may not be aware that this is actually an institution that dates back quite so many years.
Starting in 1976, so it's been around a while. John Sperling had a terrific idea about how to work with those underserved individuals who needed education.
Mm-hmm.
And that idea was very simple. You just say, we're adults. Let's follow an adult learning model and see if it works. So, one night a week for class, one class at a time. You do a lot of work via writing.
Mm-hmm.
You have an opportunity to participate with your instructors, whom you consider colleagues, so there's a lot of facilitation, a lot of interaction. There's teamwork, that is team assignments, so you collaborate, you work together. And from that very simple idea, concept, has evolved a tremendous university.
How many students nationwide at this point in time does University of Phoenix touch?
About 400,000.
400,000. And before the show, I had mentioned one of my more provocative conversations I had with a board I sat on back in the 90s. This would have been at a more traditional premier residential institution as they viewed themselves, which they are. And I had mentioned this model of what was brewing, and this was the 90s, that University of Phoenix is taking the world by storm in terms of particularly enabling remote learning for professionals that did a lot of travel or had to be posted or just merely were uprooted, let alone they had full-time jobs during the day. And I recall my colleagues there, all of them wildly successful, though, poo-pooing the idea. And I said, mark my words. And at that time, I think you had 60,000 students worldwide.
Right. Right. The idea of the classroom setting stayed with the university for a little over 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then John Sperling again said, look, we've got this internet.
Right.
We've got this whole facility out there that would allow us to reach far more
students. A virtual
facility,
yep.
Yeah, a virtual facility. And so in 1989, he started online education. He developed his own online learning system. through, of course, his colleagues, those that were part of the University of Phoenix. And that online learning system has evolved over the years. But it follows very much the same model in that the education is facilitated.
Mm-hmm.
There is an instructor for every class, still one class at a time, still teamwork, but it's done virtually.
Done virtually.
Which is, you know, it's just a terrific way to learn, and we see now in this day and age that what was once innovative is now mainstream.
Mainstream. The other thing we're seeing, of course, is that this learning model is starting to touch in earlier years than just higher ed. With high schools, when that isn't just GED programs, but even into the younger years, whether it be because the economic conditions are such they can't run a bricks and mortar school, or you've got a recognition again of the different learning modalities of people.
That's correct. Yes, it has reached into the lower groups. In fact, it wasn't but a few years back, about 10 years ago, when we were saying you had to be 23 before you could come to the University of Phoenix.
Oh.
And then gradually, for example, the Higher Learning Commission, by whom we're accredited, say, why are you limiting it to those that are 23 and older? And we thought, well, because they're working adults, and we have these ideas about who working adults are, and so it opened up. I remember the last class I taught down in Nogales, I had a number who were just recently out of high school and doing very well in this type of environment because of their needs. They still needed to work during the day.
Yes.
They still needed to support family. They needed all of this. But they also needed something very important, and that was education.
Education, and also that type of community. What I found was interesting, I picked up, you said in 1989, the online education learning system came to bear. So when we say system, of course, you have the delivery mechanism, all the IT know-how that the University of Phoenix has. But I would venture to say you also have a model of your instructors knowing and having being equipped to teach in a different way as facilitators and kind of director or directresses of the environment, not the, you know, the classic person at the top explaining down to the minions.
The for example, if you wanted to teach for us, you would be brought in through an assessment process,
mm-hmm.
looking at your background, your credentials, what you've done in business or in education. Then you would go through that assessment, get accepted. After that, you go through a certification process. That's a minimum of 4 weeks of literally going through and practicing mm-hmm. what we do and learning how we do it, because it is very... I wouldn't say rigid, but it's a very different way to approach.
It's a different map, yeah.
Yeah, to approach learning. And then after that, you would take and go into your first class. Now, you do this whether it was online or at a local campus on ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the online environment. Even our ground instructors now do a lot of their work online because you have to work in both. And then you would start your first class with a mentor to make sure that you had someone who could help you facilitate that. I remember when I went into the online modality, it was just that strict. And even though I'd been teaching ground, I still had to go through the same process to learn how to facilitate academic activity in an online setting so that the students come out well prepared and have a wonderful experience instead of just, I'm
rote
doing
memorization
things. Yeah, rote memorization,
right,
and that sort of thing.
Or checking the boxes.
Right.
Well, I think the other thing to appreciate, of course, is that the University of Phoenix, you offer a full suite of the various levels of certification, associates, undergraduate, graduate, and doctoral programs. And I can imagine when the first play on the doctoral world that the arms went up and said, oh, no, this can't be, you know, a real certified doctor. It's not the real deal.
But it is. That started just a few years ago. And now we have our advanced studies, you know, the College of Advanced Studies, which is the doctoral program. And it also is only offered online, mm-hmm. but you still have your residency requirements, so you still get together as cohort groups, and I'm not sure how many times a year, at least twice.
But, of course, that really is for the adult learning model, how many times I encourage people in my coaching venue when they go back for additional educations to be very discerning and really check out the demographics of your cohort group, because at the end of the day, chances are at least 50% of what you're going to learn is through and with your cohorts, not necessarily just through an outstanding facilitated instructor.
And that is exactly the model, because mm-hmm. We believe in when you're facilitating learning, it's not just the instructor's role to dump information, but it's his role to draw out everybody's knowledge, experience, and our students have a wealth of background, experience, knowledge. Might not be in the exact subject, but it can be related to that subject.
Well, in fact, based on our previous subject, previous guest about creativity, you want that kind of mix to provoke new learning, don't you?
Sure you do. Sure you do. That whole notion of being creative.
Being creative. We're speaking, by the way, to Greg Johnson, who is the campus director for the four University of Phoenix campuses here based in southern Arizona. Greg, I would venture to say that if you went and spoke with some of your instructors who've been with the organization for so many years like you, how much they probably have changed and altered their teaching style as the technology came about, right? I mean, this is kind of one step ahead of the other, or in step together with how technology has dramatically impacted the teaching capability.
And let me tell you a simple story.
Please, yes.
And then this is personal, but we all kind of went through the same thing as instructors. Those of us have been around a while. So here I am teaching education courses, Masters of Education courses in Utah, and thoroughly enjoying it, face-to-face ground. And they say, we're thinking about putting all the textbooks that our students use digitally. They'll only get them via the online modality, via the internet, and not hard copy. And we'd like to start this in the College of Education. Now, imagine that.
Yeah.
And it's not the easiest college, because these are master's students who are teachers who like that hard paper copy.
Yes.
So I taught one of the first classes using
digital textbooks.
And everyone thought, this will never last. It'll never work. Imagine how that affected my style. All of a sudden, how do you use the textbook in the classroom? Well, you have to figure out how you're going to put it up on the screen, how you're going to use certain sections, how to move from page to page differently.
They can't say, let's all flip back to the first third of the book. Yeah. Wait a minute, that's how many times can I scroll to get to it?
Yeah, and this is before we had a lot of different scrolling technologies that have evolved with the online delivery of text. And so, yeah, it was a lot of fun convincing them, as much as anything, that they could do it. And not go to the printer and print, you know, thousands of copies.
25 copies, exactly, and kill trees. Of course, you have in front of you one of the Neanderthals that still likes to buy books, and run my highlighter over them as I'm sitting amongst a sea of e-readers when I fly. So, yeah, I get it. And so, and to imagine to be an instructor in that kind of environment that's in an upheaval at the same time.
And that whole world evolved also, which is really, in my mind, it's been very fun to be a part of this journey, because imagine starting with a university and they're saying, for example, you have to have a library. Well, we've got a library. No, you don't. Where's the brick and mortar?
Yeah,
where's the building? No, it's online. We have massive numbers of articles and books and other things available via the internet. Well, now it's not only innovative, it's accepted.
Oh, not only accepted, it's required.
It's required. And all universities have gone to this type of delivery. Now, our students, for example, through their, through their portal, their eCampus portal, they can access over 1,000 texts.
Right.
Outside of their subject area, if they want to, they can get into anything they choose. And for any given class, they may be able to access 2, 3, or 4 different textbooks if they choose, even though there may be an assigned, there are always assigned readings.
Which always is important. I mean, we just went through an experience with my daughter in geometry, and the book they have selected in her school for 8th grade, it was not an approach to geometry as visual as she needed. So the first thing we did is get an alternative textbook, and boy, the way she could blend the two together.
And now the students can do that. And instructors can help guide them. Well, have you thought about looking here? So that's how our, you know, you have to ask about changing your method of teaching.
Mm-hmm.
You're still facilitating the learning. You just have to be so much more aware of what's available to the students so that they can access what they need, not necessarily what you need as an instructor.
You bet. Well, the other, of course, key driver here, of course, is the University of Phoenix is a for-profit institution, meaning that your customers are your students, and that your profile of your students, I imagine, over these years certainly has changed, will change, continues to change. And so what are the major drivers to know when you as a professor, if you were the instructor, or you as an administrator, know that you got to step up? I think you had mentioned the fact that now there are other competing institutions that are adopting your model.
Sure. Probably the main driver is our students themselves. Every class is, they have an opportunity to complete a survey on that class. They are offered surveys, we call them engagement surveys along the way, where they can express not only their concerns, their needs, but their experiences, their wonderful experiences, and evaluate them. And through all of that, we've learned that we have to provide even a greater level of service and a greater level of help than we have in the past. Part of the evolving student is that because we have an open enrollment policy, more and more of them need basic help.
They're not being well served by our secondary education system.
Right.
You're seeing it graphically.
And so we've had to evolve that way. As an example, we have a Center for Math Excellence. You can go in there and get very basic to very sophisticated math help, either tutoring or online or facilitated via someone in an online environment. We have a Center for Writing Excellence, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of examples, lots of help, lots of assistance. Plus, we offer workshops at our campuses here in Tucson and at our other locations where students can come, for example, math, every Saturday. There's a two-hour workshop. They can come and get help. It's free. It's even open to the public if they wanted to come.
Mm-hmm.
And all of our workshops are open and free, along with our facilities, which is great.
There was a time, I believe, when the evolution of the University of Phoenix, that a lot of those who attended were already full-time employed or were gainfully employed. Of course, now your model has opened up a field of view for a lot of people during these tough economic times to join in your communities. So am I right in saying that the last 3 or 4 years you've seen a difference in your demographics or your makeup of your student body? And then knowing that, what have you had to do to provide additional services or help?
The makeup has changed some, for sure, just because of what you said, although the majority of our students still work.
Mm-hmm.
They need it of necessity, but they come to us because they do need to work. And even though the job may not be exactly what they want, they're there, and now they're seeking something better. But you're right, some of them now are unemployed. And so they still need the same types of services. They just need to know that they can finish and that we're there to help them get done.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, we can't take the test for them. We're not going to do the assignments. But when I say help them, we're going to be there to provide them the counsel, the resources, and other things, either at our campus or, as I've mentioned, online, so that they can get through this.
Are your students also looking to you to help them on the whole career transition post-graduating then? Is that a new frontier for you?
That was the one I was just going to mention. Besides that, now we're moving into more career, career orientation, career choices, career opportunities. Now, this is just a starting, evolving front at the University of Phoenix, but just recently the students were told about this, the career choices that is available to them, some of these
opportunities. If anything, that's important probably to be able to wrap around to make sure that they're even in the right curriculum to start with.
Exactly.
So that it isn't just what the market might bear, but to make sure they're in something that'll play passionately what they're gifted with.
Right. And so a lot of that help comes up front before they get started into the program.
Right.
That's really important, because where our programs run sequentially and they just keep going. Doesn't require a lot of work on the student's part to stay in school once they've made the selection. It's really important that selection be correct, because then you're just kind of marching through, which makes it a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, if you've made a poor choice, it can be detrimental on the other side. So there's a lot of help up front and along the way. We've even got, for example, we have a new facility called Phoenix Connect, where online mm-hmm. students can connect with other students.
Great.
in the same program, in the same field.
So this is for peer mentoring, connection.
Yes.
So it's
yes.
like a social network hub for those who are already connected with
yes.
the University of Phoenix.
And the instructors connect. For example, I'm connected in there, so they can even direct questions to me.
Which I would think you folks have such a phenomenal resource, because isn't a large portion of your instructors also employed in other business ventures?
Exactly.
So they've got the explicit and tacit knowledge of what this career thing means all about.
Right, and that's part of this evolution, is that in the past, so many of our students had jobs. We did not want to
disrupt
it.
Exactly, particularly if their employer is paying for the course.
Exactly, but now it's much more important that we offer these services, and that's part of that evolution.
Sure. Well, the other connection I had, of course, with your organization is having been a leader in a global organization that we were really encouraging particular engineers to pursue master's work. But because of their being posted internationally, quite often the idea of having a residential beachhead, it was really, really tough. I would imagine, too, that the opportunity for University of Phoenix to serve our men and women in the U.S. military and the ambassadorial corps and so on is a very rich possibility, isn't it?
Not only a rich possibility, but we are probably one of the major educators for the military, and we serve them very well. And it is a great opportunity, because they could start here in Tucson,
right,
and they can finish any place, and they don't have to worry about the curriculum changing or those kinds of things.
And then also,
the model's the same.
The diversity that they bring to their work groups.
Right.
I mean, to imagine that one of your classmates is dispatched on a UAV post over in Afghanistan, and he's doing a class with you at the same time. I mean, what a phenomenal thing.
Yeah. One of our graduates last year was from Afghanistan. Our commencement speaker this year, Command Master Chief Bon Banks from the military, highest ranking naval non-commissioned officer. She was absolutely wonderful.
And I understand she's going to pursue a doctorate degree now.
With us. Yes.
Yeah. And that there's no finer testimonial than to have a customer come back.
And she said the same thing most of our students said. I arrived at a certain point in my career. Mm-hmm. They said I needed a degree to go further. I had to find an option. The University of Phoenix offered me that option, and it's been a superior education, and it opened the door. And now it's opened the door to where she's at today.
Sure. I think also the opportunity for her to reverse mentor then for others that are in the program. Well, question I always enjoy asking near the close of my discussions, Greg, is, so tell me, how do you think you've changed in the process of being part of such an important change agenda, both within the University of Phoenix and this whole landscape of higher ed?
I'll just say the one thing that I've learned as you move through change, and it's been really important to me. I'm one that likes to control things. Okay.
Guess what?
You can probably imagine.
I know where it's going.
And the thing that I've learned more than anything else is that you can only, if you're thinking through change, you can only control what's in your purview to control. And you'd better realize that very quickly and get out of the way of the rest, or help facilitate it and make it happen, because it won't happen if you're standing in the way.
In the way. I think the other possibility you and I were talking prior to coming on board, if you want to be part of a change agenda such as you all are part of and will continue to be, you have to allow yourself to be vulnerable to play and re-experience things you don't know.
Exactly.
And that, indeed, if you look at the foundation you folks started in 1976, that's been about at the core.
That's at the core.
That's very good.
You have to be willing to move with it. And isn't that what we, that's the greatest part of learning.
Yeah. And indeed, lifelong learning in particular.
Yes.
Well, Dr. Greg Johnson from the University of Phoenix, based here in Tucson, thank you so much for contributing to our show, and keep marching on that change agenda.
We are. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for joining us. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsengroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.